The Sports Cage on Demand is brought to you by the Canadian Brewhouse, with the best food and drink specials and the most TVs for your favorite sports.
Feel it coming in the air.
Good afternoon, Saskatchewan. How you doing on this Tuesday? Mitchell Blair in with you. We're going to hear from Rod Peterson right away. Today's show brought to you by Saskatchewan Lotteries, the fundraiser for over 12,000 sport, culture, and recreation groups. As is always on a Tuesday, I'm joined by the Duke, Derek Myers. How are you, my good man?
I got a new phone, Scruffy.
So uh-oh, what do you got?
Got the iPhone 8.
Okay.
I didn't go full 10. It has face recognition, and I don't need my face being recognized by anyone, let alone my phone. But I'm very excited, because it's like Christmas for me. I like new technology, gizmos, and gadgets. So
your face is recognized on post office walls throughout this
and it's not because I'm missing.
No, that's right, which is why when I walk out of here every night I keep looking for sirens, but that's another story in itself. Roddy's on hold. We're gonna get to him in right away, but first off, your thoughts on what happened in the East semifinal. I know, like me, you thought it was going to be a close game.
Yeah.
It was a game that really, I thought the score flattered Ottawa.
It was a game that the Riders were dominant. Absolutely. I have to agree with you. I was impressed. I was extremely impressed with, from the word go, I was impressed that they took the ball off of the coin flip. I love the decision. I love the decision on the first offensive drive down the field, where Stephen McAdoo was able to get everybody involved. Every single guy that he needed to get involved, he did. Bakari Grant, Naaman Roosevelt, Daron Carter, all catching passes. You get Marcus Thigpen involved with a run. I just thought it was a brilliantly called first drive that really set the tone for the game. And I know Ottawa came back and did some things with Spencer. He got the touchdown. But after that, I did like what the defense did. I thought they caught a couple of breaks. I thought Ottawa dropped a couple of balls that certainly... you know, could have made a difference in the game, but hey, that's how it goes. I mean, Chad Owens dropped a ball or two. Like, I mean, there was drops on both sides. I really thought that Sam McGovern's interception was that was the game. After that, there was really no doubt. I the Riders didn't really bend much, and it was quite clear that the offensive line was doing an amazing job.
I'm with you on the Sam McGovern play, because both teams went up and down the field in that first quarter.
Track meet.
But that sort of silenced Ottawa, but they were within 10.
Sure.
When Marr kicked the field goal, and then the next play, Thigpen takes it for the touchdown. That was the dagger. But I'm with you. It was sort of like once McGovern intercepted that pass, it seemed like the Riders were in control of the football game.
Well, the defense gathered a bunch of confidence from that. All of a sudden, it was like, we got the stop. They needed to get that stop because you're right. It was a track meet to begin with.
Your call's more than welcome again today. 936-6262, 1-866-767-0620. I should tell you, we're just waiting to get Rod in the line. We'll have him here momentarily. Should tell you also today, Arash Madani is going to join us in hour two. We're also going to be joined by Pats coach John Paddock. And in hour three tonight, we will go to Edmonton and talk to the analyst on 630 CHED for the Edmonton Eskimos, the one, the only Dave Campbell,
Soup.
About what is going on there. But we go right to the Wheaton Kia hotline, and we go to Rod Peterson, who has spent the day sightseeing in Ottawa. How are you, my good man?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Good to talk to you.
I was going to say, what's new with Canada's team today? But Canada's team didn't do anything today. So how much have you seen of them today? And if you have seen them, how are they feeling?
That's part of the reason why I wanted to come on early and for a good chunk of the show today, just to tell everybody the scene with the team. And for one, if this team advances to the Grey Cup, I can't imagine the amount of belly aching we're going to put up with the term Canada's team.
Oh, well, get used to it.
Oh, I've just been hit by a tidal wave of it from fans from all the other teams across the CFL, and I'm wondering when the Dallas Cowboys came up with the term America's team in 1979-ish, if they put up with anywhere near the amount.
Of course, they still do, Rod.
I'm sure they do.
And they're okay with it.
True in their case, true in our case. But anyways, I've seen probably every member of the team over the past 2 days, just bumping into them, whether it be in the market in Ottawa or here around the hotel. And most recently, I ran into Mike Edom and Caleb Hawley in the adjoining mall, the Rideau Center, and I asked them if they're bored yet. And Edom said, not at all. And they were heading out to go shopping, I guess, or do whatever they did. As far as what their schedule is, sounds like Monday, the team, the guys that needed treatments, got those from the therapy staff. And that's really been the only pain of staying out here for the week as opposed to going home and using their own facilities in the Ivan Goodfriend therapy room in the new stadium, which is the most lavish in the CFL. They've had to go to therapy clinics around town. The Ottawa Red Blacks did not offer their facilities for use, which is not a surprise. But
really?
Yeah. Well, as a matter of fact, that came up, too. I thought, boy, it would be nice if the Red Blacks opened their doors to the Riders, and somebody said, we wouldn't open ours to anybody else. So the Riders get it. So it's kind of been like camping. So they've been going to all these clinics and so forth and getting their treatments, setting up kind of like a MASH unit here in the hotel to get whatever medical treatment the guys need, therapy treatment. And then today, I believe they were in a lot of meetings going over film study of the Ottawa game and for sure this Sunday's opponents, the Argonauts. So it's not like they've been doing nothing, believe me. And then the personnel staff, Chris Jones, Jeremy O'Day, John Murphy, have been meeting for literally hours on end over everything that you can think of. A little bit of it, travel, which I think has been sorted out for the Toronto trip this weekend. But the biggest one is roster, availability of players, and options. Because I listened to John Murphy's interview on the Sports Cage yesterday, and he dropped that bomb that there'll be some surprise additions for practice tomorrow. And although I'm not at liberty to say who it is specifically, it's just players that you haven't seen for a good long time on the roster because of injury situations. But because they've played so long and deep now, guys are starting to come back. So it's nobody new, and you can't add anybody new at this point of the season, but it's guys coming back from injury that's given them a lot of flexibility in a lot of areas. And they'll be on the field tomorrow at Carleton University at 11 till 1. I'm still trying to figure out, because they said the practices are closed, if that means to all fans and media or just closed to fans, I'm not quite sure. I was invited, thankfully, to go to the practice tomorrow, so I'll be there, but I know that I won't be able to report on a whole lot of what I see.
Well, you know, it's funny because when John Murphy said that last night, Roddy, and I don't know how much you listened to the show after John was done, although I guess that would have been before you came on, so I don't know if you would have heard it or not. A few people were, you know, just throwing out some names, and Nick James's name came out, but Otha Foster's name came out. And I know you can't say what's going on, but if Otha Foster was to come back, that just makes what's a very good defense a lot better.
Yeah, well, yeah, but I can't say.
No, I know, and I don't know. The team has asked you to stay mum on that, and you've obviously got to adhere to their wishes, so that's fine. I do understand that. But the one thing I do want to ask you, though, you're talking about the Red Blacks not wanting to give up their facilities for the Riders. At what point does the CFL step in with Ottawa being the Grey Cup host and say, okay, now you can go in? Like if the Riders were to win, do they get Ottawa's dressing room, or does the Western team get Ottawa's dressing room? Do we know that? Because I'm thinking if the Riders were to win, they would want to move right in on Monday.
Yeah, well, we haven't talked about that, but to address your question specifically, you said at what point does the league step in? It's Grey Cup week, and all of a sudden the Rough Riders become the home team by virtue of representing the East. So they would have, full access to the Red Blacks treatment facilities at TD Place Stadium. So until then, they don't, and everybody understands that. I mean, I got a lot of friends on the Red Blacks coaching staff, and I've been talking with them over the past couple of days. They are floored that the Rough Riders are staying down here all week.
A lot of people are.
Why?
Yeah. And whether it be expense or whatever, the time change is only an hour. I guess you'd. When Chris Jones was asked that after the Edmonton loss in the last game of the regular season, his reason for doing it, do you remember what he said? They've done it before,
yeah.
It's worked.
They've done it twice before, and it's worked.
And if anything, like football players are creatures of habit and routine. You don't want to introduce foreign things. Like, yeah, they all believe We just did this. We'll do it again.
Yeah, and Roddy, you and I talked about this when they went to Ottawa and Toronto. I said this is a Grey Cup rehearsal, dress rehearsal for them. And so why wouldn't they do the same thing again?
No, and I've been thinking about that multiple times over the last couple of days that you did call this, but you can also understand the Riders' thought process back then. They didn't want to look this too far ahead.
Right.
And even Rick Campbell mentioned that at his pregame news conference on Saturday. If you're walking down a path and you get looking too far down the road, you can stumble over what's right in front of you. So
that's a good point.
They wanted to take care of their business back then, which they did. And interestingly enough, with this food for thought for you guys once I vacate the line here later on, but I was on the air in Edmonton yesterday, and Dave Jamieson, the host of TSN 1260, mm-hmm. said to me, at what point did you become a believer in this football team or realize that they could get it done? And I said, well, the turning point in the season, looking back, was the home game against the BC Lions.
Yeah.
And I think Brendan Labatt's impassioned speech, which I said on Edmonton radio, Brendan said he was embarrassed to be from Saskatchewan and have to answer for this team because of all his friends and family from Saskatchewan. That, I think, had a major effect on the locker room because it wasn't coming from the coach anymore. It was coming from one of the veteran leaders. And then, of course, 2 days later, sure, the BC Lions didn't show up that day. We all know that. Riders can't be responsible for what the Lions did or didn't do, but the Riders pulverized them, and they've gone 9-4 since. So that kind of was the turning point. But I didn't become a believer, to be honest, that they could challenge for a Grey Cup until the Eastern back-to-back games when they won in Ottawa and Toronto. They clinched a playoff berth, if you recall, on Thanksgiving weekend, and that's when I realized, yeah, they're in, they got a chance now. That's when I became a believer. It may be different for other people, but now the collective feeling seems to be, just from some of the guys I've talked to, look, we've come this far, why stop now? They're certainly not satisfied with clinching a playoff berth, which is huge in year two of the regime. But they want to keep going, make history, and win it all. This is an unbelievable story unfolding here, and you guys can all see that.
Well, that's the question for you, Chain Gang, today. When did you start thinking that this team had turned the corner? And as Roddy mentioned, the Brendan Labatt interview that was done, that was when the team was 2-4, and that was right before that BC home game, right, Rod?
Yes, it was. It was that, 2 days before. It was on the Thursday before.
Yeah. So, and you know, that's when this season started to turn around for me, was when they turned around and mollywopped the Lions after what BC had done to them. I didn't think that the Riders, you know, obviously they had shown that they could win. You know, they had to win games against a Western opponent, and they didn't do that against Calgary. They didn't do that against BC on the road. Then they came back here and beat the Lions, and it sort of seemed to flick a switch for them. For me... I started taking this team seriously after they beat the Calgary Stampeders. After all that turmoil that happened leading up to the game with the Daron Carter, quote, fight, Daron Carter playing defensive back, and then they went out and hammered the Stamps. That's when I started to think, you know what, this team has the ability to make some noise. Roddy's going to hang on with us for the first hour. We're going to take a break. When we come back, more with Rod from the nation's capital. You are listening to the Sports Cage, presentation of Saskatchewan Lotteries today on 620 CKRM. The Montreal Canadiens are adding some depth to the goaltender position. The Habs have picked up Antti Niemi off of waivers.
Sure.
Regular starter Carey Price is nursing a lower body injury that he says isn't serious. And then they go out and sign Niemi. I'll let you take that for what it is. The Habs entertain Columbus tonight. Winnipeg's home to Arizona. The Oilers welcome the Vegas Golden Knights, and Vancouver is at LA. The Riders took one more day off before starting to get ready for Sunday's Eastern Final. The Riders will be practicing at Carleton University before heading to Toronto, where they hope to become the first team to cross over from the West and make the Grey Cup. Of course, we'll have Sunday's Eastern Final for you starting at noon right here on CKRM. And if slugger Giancarlo Stanton is traded this offseason by the Miami Marlins, it will not be to the Boston Red Sox or St. Louis Cardinals. The Boston Herald is reporting that despite great interest in the outfielder, Stanton would veto a move to either club. The Marlins, now under new ownership that includes former Yankee Derek Jeter, are said to be intent on cutting salary this offseason, and Stanton still has $295 million and 10 years remaining on his current contract. While divesting themselves of Stanton's deal would go a long way to help budgetary concerns, he has a full no-trade clause. That doesn't help. Stanton led the majors with 59 home runs this past season. The afternoon rush for Boston Pizza. Every game night at Boston Pizza, enjoy a 575 schooner of Budweiser and enter to win one of 23 incredible NFL trips to Dallas. Mitchell Blair, Derek Myers, Rod Peterson with you. Roddy on the line with us here for the first hour from Ottawa as we... Roddy, I don't know, do we want to start looking ahead to Toronto yet, or could we still look back on what happened Sunday? And today's sort of that day that, you know, okay, where do you go? Because I know once the team starts practicing tomorrow, you do want to start looking ahead, but a lot of questions, you know, being asked about the football team and whether or not they can do what no other team has done, and that is win the Eastern Division, coming out of the West, being the crossover team. A lot of people are talking about the fact they stayed out there and the money it costs. And as John Murphy said yesterday, money shmoney at this time of year. We do what we can to win. There's just so many things circulating around Canada's team. And we talked about that. And it's funny, you know, the Argos have already said we're going to have our biggest crowd of the year Sunday.
The ratings
were the highest they've been for playoff games for the last couple of years. Roddy, who wasn't in the playoffs for the last couple of years?
Yeah, that's like, the thing. I don't know what's just... more pitiful, the fact that these guys complain when we call the Riders Canada's team, or the fact that they actually believe it. It's lunacy to think otherwise.
Yeah, and like as I said, the ratings are up, and the ratings were good for the Edmonton-Winnipeg game as well, and more people did
crowd
watch
wasn't.
Edmonton-Winnipeg than what did watch the Saskatchewan-Ottawa game, according to the numbers I saw today, but there wasn't a big disparity between the two. But, Roddy, it's obvious, though, that the Riders are what stirs the league's drink here.
Oh, well, that's not... I don't know what to add to that. We've known that for several years. I've chuckled, like Derek did, that this will be the largest crowd for the Argos of the year. 16,000 would do that, and I think their largest was when the Riders were there in Week 16.
I believe you're right.
So yeah, and I think it's really cool... it's a different world that we live in now than 10, 20 years ago. I ran into a couple of Rider fans down here at the War Memorial yesterday when I was filming a segment for the Riders website, the three-minute drill. There's two guys in Rider shirts, and, of course, they stick out like a sore thumb. And I said, what's you guys' deal? And they flew out Sunday. It was a man and his son from Regina. They landed at 1 on Sunday, caught the second half of the semifinal. Pleased as punch, they were able to be in the stadium to watch that. They're going to Montreal to catch an NHL game tonight, coming back here to watch the Sens and Penguins on Thursday, going down to Toronto to watch the East Final on next Sunday. And there are a lot of fans, just judging by what I see on social media, that are booking their tickets and going to Toronto, and I can only imagine they'll stay for the Grey Cup, because there have been hundreds, if not thousands, of tickets come up for sale from Red Blacks fans in the last 48 hours. So if you want to come out here, and you'll know Sunday afternoon whether the Riders are in or not. Tickets might not be that hard to come by for the Grey Cup.
You just brought me to my next question. We always sort of wondered here a few years ago, if the Riders didn't make it to the Grey Cup, how many fans would sell their tickets for that game? And of course, we never got the answer to that, because the Riders came through and won the Grey Cup. But are they just basically selling tickets en masse in Ottawa now that the home team won't be in the game, or not?
Well, they are, because they know that they can get their money back, but it's not like their interest in the Grey Cup has waned at all. Luke was marveling the other night how great of a CFL town this is, and a lot of people don't understand that. They've had two prior franchises fold because of lack of fan support, but people forget how terrible and poorly owned and managed those teams were. They love the CFL in Ottawa. They're very geeked up for the Grey Cup. Here in the hotel, all the staff is clearly aware of it, and they're battening down the hatches and preparing for the country to come here, next week's time, to be honest, for the Grey Cup. So people aren't stupid. They know they can offload their tickets to Rider fans, probably not Argo fans, but for sure Rider fans, and why not get your money back? But it has not dampened the spirit for the Grey Cup. I'll say this. This will be the 105th Grey Cup. It has the potential to be the greatest ever because of the hype here in Ottawa and the way they know how to throw a party. They're an event town. It's a fantastic stadium. I'm telling you, if you have the means, and we know the Riders are going to be in it, I would try every effort to get here, because it'll be worth it.
I have never been to Ottawa, so when I ask this question, I do understand it could be stupid when I ask it, but is everything going to be around one place in Ottawa for Grey Cup festivities, or do you have to go sort of here for the Spirit of Edmonton, here for the Stampeders room, here for Riderville? You know where I'm going with that.
Yeah, no, there are two. There's a very popular area right close to, well, it's about a block or two from the House of Commons, if anybody knows Ottawa, that's called the Byward Market. Derek, have you been here?
Yeah.
So you know exactly what I'm talking about. It is a, I don't know what it is, 7-square-block radius, just full of bars, restaurants, that kind of thing. That will be jammed. When we were here in late September, I already just, you know, looked across this area and thought, boy, this is going to be crazy for Grey Cup. And then the other is probably less than a mile away. It's called the Glebe District, and that's where the stadium is. And they really got something going on here. These Renegades, or Red Blacks owners, have to be commended. They've built those condo high-rises around the stadium. There are probably a good dozen or more restaurants around there, a Joey's, a craft beer store, or beer restaurant, all these places, like tons of them. And that's where Ryderville's going to be. I mean, you can throw a stone from Ryderville to the stadium, from what they tell me.
Great.
In the Ag Pavilion, they call it, which is kind of homey for us to be there.
No kidding.
So there's two areas, but it's close enough, guys, that after the semifinal game on Sunday, a lot of the Ryder coaches walked from the stadium to the hotel. I want to say it's about 2 kilometers at the most. What's a mile? 1.7 kilometers?
1.6, yep.
It's about that. So if you can walk a mile, and hopefully the weather's not bad. That's always the big thing. I mean, the 2013 Grey Cup will go down as the best, but minus 48 tended to put a little bit of a damper on that. I'm still shocked that somebody didn't die that week, just fell in a snowbank and died and froze. It didn't happen, but this one has that potential.
Yeah, well, after Tyron Brackenridge dumped water, champagne, everything over me, and I had to wait for the bus. I thought I was going to die of pneumonia waiting outside for it, but thankfully it was a nice night. Hey, listen, we will take a break. We'll come back. Roddy, you're with us for the rest of the hour, so we'll get back to you in a moment. You're listening to The Sports Cage, presentation of Sask Lotteries today on 620 CKRM. So Blair, Derek Myers with you on this Tuesday. Rod Peterson also on the line from Ottawa. Show today a presentation of Sask Lotteries. Thanks for being a part of the show, Saskatchewan. Yesterday on this program, I think it was Travis texted in the music bed under Roddy's highlights. He wanted to know what the tune was, and
doesn't know Shazam?
We couldn't answer the question because Nevin Chamney wasn't here yesterday. So today, Travis, I found Nevin, said, what was that music you used under the highlights? And he says the song is called Walk on Water from 30 Seconds to Mars.
What?
So there you go, Travis. That's coming from Nevin.
What the who the?
So there you go. Roddy, I know you're a huge 30 Seconds to Mars fan.
I feel like I'm 30 seconds from Mars.
Before we get back into the football talk, I know you wanted to bring up a gentleman today that passed away suddenly, a former owner of the Coyotes, a guy by the name of George Gosby.
Yeah, that was tragic news when I heard that this morning. George Gosby suddenly passing away at the age of 48 on Sunday. He was the governor of the Coyotes, and if you saw any of the coverage of his death, a lot of the photos were of him with Gary Bettman. He was at all the news conferences when they went through their latest ownership strife. He's a Calgary guy. He's got a lot of friends in Regina. He's a money investment guy, and it's just a tragic, tragic story. I spent quite a bit of time actually around George. We went to Cardinals games together, some Coyotes games, spent a lot of time with and around him, and that was a tragic story. Today, he was very close to our good friend Gary Drummond, who's probably listening today, and I know Gary would be shaken by this news, so really sad on the passing of George Gosby. Leaves a family behind, and just a tough one. Condolences to that family, for sure.
And someone who was very passionate about keeping the NHL in the desert as well.
Oh, he absolutely was. And until Andrew Barraway sold out here this last spring, George Gosby was going to do that, keep that team there if it was the last thing he ever did. And I guess, not to sound callous, I guess it was, because the team is still there. Fledgling, of course, worst team in the NHL, but George did everything he could. Real good guy. Really good guy. And the NHL and that Coyotes hockey family's mourning today, no doubt.
Back to football, and a couple of texts have come in. One on the 540 And from Travis in Regina, thank you. There you go, Travis. From the 540 anonymous texter, Glenn played well, no doubt about it, but
I was waiting
do
for
we
the
still
butt.
Need to see Bridge in Toronto? Roddy, we can't answer that question.
No, of course not.
do we still need to see? Well, no. If Kevin Glenn plays the way he did Sunday, there's no need for Brandon Bridge.
More importantly, if the offensive line plays the way they did Sunday,
well, and that's
it didn't allow any pressure. And I talked about this sitting in for Rod tonight on In the Huddle with Marshall Hamilton. I said, last time the Riders were in Toronto, Kevin Glenn didn't play very much. Brandon Bridge came in, played excellent. They won the game. I said, now, how much of that depends on the quarterback and how much of that depends on the offensive line? Because in Ottawa, they were my game star. I gave my game star to them. Kevin Glenn, no sacks. The Marcus Thigpen 75-yard touchdown, he wasn't even touched. I mean, I thought they played excellent.
But yet that being said, and I'm not disagreeing with you, but yet Abu said yesterday, the O-line really didn't play the way you think they did because Ottawa didn't do anything to get to Kevin
but
Glenn.
You don't,
it was just the three-man rush.
That's and I know what Abu's saying, but you know what? The Riders aren't the game planners for the Ottawa Redblacks. You can only play the teams in front of you. You can only block the guys that they send. And guess what? They block the guys that were sent.
Roddy?
I'm scrambling here to pull up the stats from the regular season, and it's going to take me a minute, so if I don't find it.
That's all right. From the 502 from Don Mitchell in Ottawa, guys, just saw Mike Hogan on an Argos fan site challenge the members there to bring a friend to the Eastern Final. Hopefully there'll be a full house. I'm in Toronto right now. In the past 2 days, both the Globe and Mail and Toronto Star have had Ryder Argo stories front and center in their sports page. So here's to a great game and great crowd. And that from Don Mitchell in Ottawa. Roddy, has he bought you lunch yet?
He tried. He of course, is with the Royal Canadian Navy, and
yep.
He was very busy with the Remembrance Day activities. He wanted to get together Sunday morning. Well, that was game day. And I said, we're not going to have time, but we still got a lot of time this week to do that. But just with regards to the Argos, everybody realizes how vaunted the front seven is of the Argos,
yes.
Led by their coordinator, Corey Chamberlain. The Argos led the CFL in sacks, guys, this year with 50. They actually tied with the Calgary Stampeders. So Corey Chamberlain, if you guys remember, feel free to agree or disagree, but it was not a pressure defense he ran while with the Saskatchewan Roughriders. But he is with Toronto. Maybe that's because of the personnel that he has. But they're going to be coming after Kevin Glenn. I mean, that was the book from any opposing CFL team that the Riders faced was do everything you can to get at him, hit him late if you can, early in the game, because he won't finish. That's what the Argos are going to try to do here on Sunday. And when people say, well, I don't necessarily agree with this. I've heard it too, that Kevin Glenn won't be able to get the Riders past the Argos on Sunday. Brandon Bridge is going to have to make an appearance at some time. I'm not sure if I necessarily agree with that. Chris Jones has said it so many times, I can't think he's fibbing or pulling our leg. They don't go into a game scripting, thinking when Brandon Bridge is going to come in. They make the adjustments as the game goes along. And they don't generally plan for worst-case scenario. And that didn't happen Sunday in Ottawa. Everything went the Riders' way. I don't think it's going to go their way this Sunday. And the interesting thing, too, they're actually feeling pretty good about their offensive line because if Brendan Labatt can't go, they felt their offensive line played stellarly on Sunday.
Absolutely.
Despite what Mike Abumetric says. And as far as Labatt goes, he's now been 10, 11 days since he's been on the field. He's been rehabbing it furiously out here.
He's with you?
Yeah, and he came for the game last week.
Okay.
He will obviously didn't dress. But tomorrow at practice should be a really good indication of whether he's going to play or not. They'd love to have him. The biggest reason, ratio, more than anything.
Yeah.
But if he's not 100%, I'd be shocked to see him play because they feel like they have the luxury of Derek Dennis and what he did at left guard on Sunday.
Rod, getting back to Corey Chamberlain, you talked about what he does defensively, and you know he made his hay as a defensive coordinator in this league before becoming a head coach. Do you expect Corey Chamberlain to throw a lot of different schemes at the Riders now that it's a one-game winner-take-all, or do you expect to see the same Toronto defense that Corey Chamberlain has been using all year?
I think there'll be a few different things to cross up Kevin Glenn or Brandon Bridge. give them some looks that they haven't seen yet. But overall, it's a pretty good defense. I think the Riders' defense is getting overlooked in this matchup, to be honest with you. I mean, they were pretty stout the other day against Ottawa. But there's a great preview on the CFL website right now on the game. And the Riders gave the edge to the Argos in these positions: quarterback, running back, defensive line, linebacker, and DB.
Linebacker, right?
Which made me wonder, why are we even playing the game? Riders got the check mark in
receivers,
the kicking game, and the return game.
What about O-line?
It was a push.
So better linebackers, they say,
Yeah, Bear Woods, Marcus Ball, and I can't remember the third guy was the reason why they gave the linebackers the check to the Argos side. But look, guys, I know you felt, Mitch, and I wonder if you're changing your prediction.
I'm not. I'm telling you, Riders beat Toronto. I told you if they beat Ottawa, they would beat Toronto.
Yeah,
I think Toronto's a vastly better team than Ottawa.
Well,
I mean,
go ahead, finish.
Well, by points, they're 1 point ahead in the regular year, but I do think they're a lot better. I think they're a lot better coached. I will give you that. I don't think Toronto's going to win this game, but I think they're going to put up a hell of a fight, a lot more than Ottawa did. Let's put it this way. Mark Trestman's teams don't implode, and the Red Blacks imploded on Sunday. Did you see the comment from their GM today, Marcel Desjardins, of the Red Blacks? He said, we saved our worst game of the year for the playoffs.
I didn't see that.
Yeah. Toronto's not going to do that.
I will say this. I do believe, and I am very confident, and I am sticking by what I said. I thought that Ottawa would provide the stiffer challenge for this team. But when it comes to coaching, and I did say this yesterday, the one guy I would not want to face, having had an extra week of preparation, is Mark Trestman.
Yep.
Because this just in, that guy is pretty good.
Well, and how much does this sit, and probably not in Chris Jones's mind, and I would say a great portion of the Rider players' minds, because I think you'd have to go back to, boy, outside of Rob Bagg, I'm not even sure who would have been around then, but I mean, this guy is kind of their old nemesis, their old kryptonite when it comes back to 29 and 2010. And I know it doesn't apply to the team now, but as a fan, you can't help but remember Mark Trestman on those sidelines.
Yeah. And again, Luke has said this many times. He says it's very hard to beat a team three times.
We'll add that too.
In a season. I don't go along with that, because I remember a number of years ago when the Riders, it might have been 2010 when George Cortez was with the Stampeders, Riders beat Calgary three times in the regular year and tied them once. Did they play that many times? Maybe they beat them twice and tied them once, and George was saying that, you're not going to beat us four times. Well, they did. I mean, I like the Riders' odds going in, given their history against them this year, than had they lost twice to them in the regular year. But I just think it's going to be a phenomenal battle, phenomenal football game. And when we were there in Week 16, the cat-and-mouse game between Mark Trestman and Chris Jones was just a treat to watch, and the Riders came out on top that day. Incidentally, I ran into Chad Owens today, shared an elevator ride with him, and there was Josiah St. John was in there as well, and the topic came up of motivation for Chad going back and facing the Argos. He said he doesn't have any at all. He was really spurned after the 2015 season. They didn't want him back, but he said it's an entirely different regime there now. New coaches, new faces, new stadium, new everything. He's not motivated by that, but you can guarantee he'll be on the roster. And we know all that speculation last week as to who's going to be in and who's out. Caleb Hawley was scratched. Chad Owens was inserted. Owens was a huge factor in that game.
Especially early.
Without a doubt.
I just felt like every time that the ball got near him, he was a nice breath of fresh air. You could sense his energy.
Yep.
And go ahead.
If anybody wonders what the Riders work on behind closed doors in these practices when they close the doors to the media, that reverse was one thing that they worked on over and over and over again last week at the Credit Union Eventplex, and it worked out perfectly, and it should have been a cue to the Red Blacks when the Riders dropped back Jones and Owens on punt return, two guys. They never do that. Ottawa punted to Chad Owens intentionally, which is exactly what the Riders wanted to have happen, and they ran the reverse with Christian Jones, caught him at a perfect time. So that's why I don't know what the Argos are going to do. I expect a few new wrinkles, but I guarantee the Riders will have even more for this Sunday, and call them at key times.
All right, we will take a break. When we come back, we will finish off hour one. You're listening to The Sports Cage for Sask Lotteries today on 620 CKRM. Time for the RMP Sports Cave Sports Ticker and the top two teams in the WHL's Eastern Division. Meeting Swift Current tonight as the Broncos are home to Moose Jaw. The Warriors have a three-point lead on the Broncos. They have a six-point lead on third-place Regina. The Pats will be home to Calgary tomorrow. The team's newest player, defenseman Cale Fleury, arrived before practice today, one day after his trade from Kootenay. He will be on the ice tomorrow night. Home ice is supposed to be good for a team, but home hasn't been kind to the Edmonton Oilers. They take a 3-6 record into their game tonight at Rogers Place against the Vegas Golden Knights. It's the first time the two teams will have played against one another. Edmonton's coming off a four-game East Coast road trip where they took 5 out of a possible 8 points. That game one of 8 in the NHL tonight. In a celebration of life, former Jays pitcher Roy Halladay went this afternoon in Clearwater, Florida. He was killed in a small plane crash last week at the age of 40. Halladay won the American League Cy Young Award with Toronto in 2003 and took the National League honor with Philadelphia in 2010. The RMP Sports Cave Sports Ticker for Regina Motor Products, home of the no car crap BS. Rod Peterson on the line. He'll be with us for about another 10 minutes before we let him go for the night. Roddy, a text has come in from Dave in Regina. Roddy, I know you can't talk a lot about the roster, which I fully understand, but would you expect them to make a change at running back because Thigpen looked awfully good?
Well, that'll only be if Brendan Labatt's inserted back in. That was a bit of the conversations I had with the team today, and Murphy said it yesterday on your show that ideally they'd like two American backs. So I'm pretty sure Thigpen will be one of them. Who would be the other? Cameron Marshall's ready to go. And Trent Richardson's now been kept out for the last 2 weeks. I saw him today. He's walking without a limp. So if everybody's healthy, there'll be a decision to make as to who you put in. But you can't clearly take Thigpen off the field. Not only did he score the 75-yard touchdown, had 169 yards in rushing, they used him on returns too. So I'd be – and again, Murphy said it yesterday, nobody played their way off the roster last week, so the decisions this week may be even harder than last.
Casey Rogers may have, in my mind. Mm-hmm. Boy, oh boy.
Yeah, Roddy, I don't know how much you've heard about what's coming on back home, but Casey Rogers has been the whipping boy for what was very good performance by the football team. A lot of people didn't like the way Casey Rogers played, but...
he had his hands full with one of the best guys in the league.
Yeah, I was just going to say, he wasn't exactly battling, you know, a ham and egger out there.
Well, if you saw Casey Rogers' tweet after the game, he said, hats off to Deontay Spencer. He's never run so much in his life in a football game.
Yep.
So if he had an off night, he doesn't have many.
No.
And I don't expect that to happen again. It'll be interesting to see who he's lined up against here Sunday against the Argos. It won't be S.J. Green, obviously. It could be Posey. Armani Edwards is an inside guy, too. This is a more dynamic and dangerous group of receivers they'll face this
for
week
sure.
than last. Like when Greg Ellingson pulled himself out of the game last week, inexplicably in my mind, Ottawa instantly had nothing.
By the way,
Toronto's not going to have that situation.
I just want to say that secondary again, and Ed Gainey, you know, outstanding. Javon Johnson with the pick.
Yeah.
But once again, Cresden Butler.
Oh, he's the guy.
He's the guy.
He's
is
stud,
right.
Man.
Yeah.
Like the and not only is he great in coverage, like oh man, can that boy hit?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's. I've said since the moment I saw him on the field, that guy is stud.
Roddy from Barton, Vancouver. Guys, can you just pass along to Rod how entertaining he and Luke make the games? Always well prepared and informative. Want them to know that us Rider fans in BC appreciate their hard work.
Well, I appreciate that. The game is always the star, and the Riders made it very easy Sunday afternoon, that's for sure.
Scruffy, did I, from Uncle Lorne in Yorkton. Scruffy, did I hear right? Rodney said coaching and TO is better than Riders. Really?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, I didn't hear you say that.
No, I said
where did you say that?
So yeah, the coaching was better than Ottawa. The Toronto coaching was better than Ottawa. I think maybe Uncle Lorne just got... Yeah.
Uncle Lorne's
and the way
been
it was phrased.
Sipping too much Kahlua again.
But I mean, I just can't help but as a fan, and I know this isn't the team's thought process, but as a fan, you can't help but get that Mark Trestman thorn, that pebble in your shoe... And just have a little uneasiness in your tummy.
And I understand where you're coming from on that. Roddy, are we making too much of that just because of what Mark Trestman did in 09 and 10? Like, if he does that to Edmonton or Calgary, are we having this conversation?
I don't think we're making too much of it at all. Rider coaches are talking about what Trestman might have up his sleeve. I mean, look, yeah, he had the Riders number in those Grey Cups, and then he waltzes into Toronto and takes the worst team in the league, 5-13 last year, and has them in first place, wins the pennant, and are hosting the East Final. He's that good. There's no two ways about it. So he's the kind of guy that affects his scheme based on the talent that he has. So you can't really predict what he's going to do on Sunday. But go back to what the Riders said last week. If they take care of their own business and play the way they can, it sounds like a cliche, but there's a reason for that. I still think the Riders are the more talented team, by the way. I do. Toronto's talented. The Riders are more talented. So if Saskatchewan comes out and plays mistake-free football like they did Sunday, they will win this football game, coaching staff or not. I'll take this coaching staff with Saskatchewan over any other in the CFL. I think we saw it last week. This is the money time of year for these guys. This is when Jones and his crew really earn their money.
McAdoo had his, and in my opinion, and you could have stopped after the first drive, had his best game as an offensive coordinator in his time here. I thought the first drive was absolutely brilliant and set the tone for the entire game, how he got all his big receivers' touches, how he got the running game involved, which engages the offensive line. I thought it was just such a tone setter and such a brilliantly called drive, not because it ended in the touchdown. I mean, yeah, obviously that helps, but just how everybody was engaged from the word go.
Yeah, and when you talk about new looks, what about the misdirection play on that drive where they had both LaFrance and Owens in the backfield, and they faked a handoff to LaFrance going left, gave it to Owens going right, and the Red Blacks were completely screwed up. They were on their heels on defense all game long, and that was a new look that the Riders hadn't shown all year.
And Owens can still run. He can still scoot.
He is fueled, by the way, by those that say at 35 he still can't get it done. That's one thing that he said today in the elevator, and he said it in the Toronto Star, too. I think one of the big narratives this week will be, what's the attendance going to be? I really don't care, because I've seen the Riders play to crowds less than 10,000 in Toronto, and once the game starts, I won't care. But they're really playing up Chad Owens' return to Toronto. Not in a revenge way, but just that he was the face of the team for a long time, and now he's coming in with the enemy. It's a really good side story for this one.
Roddy, the Riders will practice at Carlton. That's where they practiced before when they were there, correct?
Yep.
The only difference being now is that whereas they went to Toronto a couple of days ahead of time, they're staying in Ottawa, three practices, and then off to Toronto, right?
Yep, and that's the other thing that I learned today, was that the last time we were here, the team bussed from Ottawa to Toronto. It was a four-hour drive. It seemed like about 16 hours. They're flying this time Friday night down to Toronto, and I talked to one of the team staff as to why that was, and they want to show the players, hey, you work hard to get to this time of year, you're going to get these kinds of perks, and we're going to treat you first class.
They do some things.
That's pretty cool.
Roddy, before I let you go, Warren from Regina has texted in, I'm picking Riders by 10. We beat the Argos twice this year. I don't understand. I think he's talking about the Trestman factor there. One game showdowns.
I don't understand why people think because you beat them twice in the regular year, all of a sudden you're in trouble in the playoffs. I think that's a good sign, not a bad sign. That's what I take from Warren, and I know him, by the way. He's our former custodian at Harvard Broadcasting, so I know what he's saying, and I just think the fact that the Riders haven't lost to them yet, you get to the thinking that, hey, you're due for a loss against a certain team. I don't think that's a factor here.
And before I let you go, from Twisted Mike, who cares about Trestman? Is he God? Chris Jones might outcoach him. The Argos don't scare me. Well, Mike, I guess we'll wait till Sunday kickoff. Hey, Roddy, thanks a lot for the time. Enjoy your evening in Ottawa, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
All right, Rod Peterson on the Wheaton Kia Hotline. When we come back, we'll go from Ottawa to Toronto. We'll talk to Arash Madani. You're listening to The Sports Cage, presentation of Sask Lotteries today on 620 CKR. Good afternoon, Saskatchewan, whoever you may be listening, wherever you may be listening. Welcome to The Sports Cage. Mitchell Blair in with you. You heard Rod Peterson in the first hour from Ottawa, and we head back east now to Sportsnet's Arash Madani. And Arash, the last time I talked to you, you were in Milan, Italy, to do an interview with Denis Shapovalov, and you stuck around in Italy because there was a pretty big sporting event going on in Milan yesterday, and I sort of touched upon it very briefly on the show last night, but this is huge. Italy is not going to make the World Cup of Soccer. You were there yesterday. I'm guessing there is shock, dismay, you name it, in Italy with what's happened to the Azzurri.
Well, Mitchell, I did a hit this morning with Breakfast Television out east, and I said good morning, and I said this is a country in mourning. Because, so here's how this happened. We were there for the Sheffield thing, as you said. And Saturday night, I get a text from the boss saying, Italy's on the brink of missing the World Cup for the first time since 1958. Can you stick around a couple extra days? Hell yeah, I can stick around a couple extra days.
Yeah, I think that'll work.
And so just kind of spend a couple of days just walking around, talking to people, trying to get some flavor and color and temperature of the people in the country. And, you know, one guy point blank just said to me, he said, sorry, we said, football is religion here. And it is. And everybody had an opinion on everything. And that stadium last night, the historic San Siro, they had just shy of 80,000 people that from 30 minutes before the match started till the absolute very end were going bananas. I mean, picture fourth and goal at the one at Lambeau Field. And, you know, the great Case Keenum trying to get into the end zone. That's what that was for 90 minutes yesterday. And suddenly this proud football nation that 11 years ago was the World Cup champion now is out for the first time in 60 years. So it was crazy last night.
And for those that are sort of going, well, okay, this is soccer, I don't know a lot about soccer, to sort of compare this, I would almost say this would be like Canada not making the medal round, or maybe even not making the Olympic hockey qualifying tournament. Would I be correct on that?
Yeah, I think that's the closest thing. I was trying to come up with a comparable yesterday, and it would be that Canada didn't even qualify for the Olympic hockey tournament with all the NHLers. Except, if we're being real, Mitchell, nobody cares about Canada's national hockey team until the Olympics.
Well, they do. They don't now either.
Right, they don't now either. Whereas the national soccer team, the Azzurri in Italy, is everything. You know, it means the world to these people. And I was wondering if there were going to be riots and fires when we woke up this morning. It was very calm. It was very quiet. It was a sad, depressed country. And this matters there. And if Canada wins silver or bronze at the Olympic tournament, there's disappointment and people are pissed. But this was a crushing blow to the national psyche. And Italy's goalkeeper, Gigi Buffon, he's retiring after 20 years with the national program. He was in tears last night after Mitchell. He said, we failed. We failed at something that matters so much socially in this country. And it does.
And I'm not mistaken, and I know Riley and Buster Riles and I were talking about this yesterday, there's a lot of countries that you would expect to be at the World Cup of Soccer that aren't going to be there this year. So, you know, the U.S. isn't going to be there. Chile isn't going to be there. The Netherlands isn't going to be there. This is going to be a different-looking World Cup this year, isn't it?
It is. And I spoke with number 7 for Sweden, this guy Sebastian Larsson, after. And he was just overjoyed. I asked him, I said, history will remember your team, your country, for knocking out Italy for the first time in 60 years. He looked at me and said, I don't care about that. He said, we've spent 11 years trying to get there. He's played 96 matches with Sweden's national team with a dream of getting to the World Cup. And it finally was realized yesterday. So out with the Italy group. There was 3 or 4 players from that 2006 championship team. They're gonna move away. Mitchell, by the time the next group of World Cup qualifiers rolls around, it's going to be a bunch of kids running around for the Azzurri. But it was last night pre-match. I looked over to my camera guy and I said, "Hey man, this is one of those pinch me moments. It really felt you were a part of something big."
Arash Madani with me on the Wheaton Kia Hotline. I know you saw the CFL games in Italy. You may have been the only guy watching Canadian football in Italy this weekend, but
I also watched the Yates Cup, the OUA Championship game.
Very
so
good.
There you go.
Very good. Can I get your thoughts on both games? I guess first off, obviously the Ryder game. a lot of us thought it was going to be a close game, and it certainly wasn't. And I really think the Riders have a really good shot at beating Toronto and going to the Grey Cup. I also think Edmonton, from what I saw, can beat Calgary and go to the Grey Cup. What did you see?
Well, I saw an Ottawa team that was just done. An Ottawa team that, you know, that played out of its mind for two games last year when it mattered. And they're really not, they're not a championship caliber football team, if we're being real. It was a final kind of gavel blast that it is imperative this league goes to a one division format, because that's a joke. That's an absolute joke that Ottawa hosted that game. Saskatchewan is far superior to the Red Blacks. Edmonton is far superior to the Red Blacks. And they were both road teams over the weekend. I agree with you on the Edmonton side. You know, I talked last week, Mitchell, and I just kept raving about Mike Riley. I'm a big fan of big game quarterbacks. I think he's got at least another one in him. Where we differ is on the green guys. I think Corey Chamberlain's defense has the ability to really slow down that Rider offense. And if Ricky Ray can control the football and not turn the ball over, I think Toronto's got a legit shot to win that one.
See, and I just think with that Rider defense being so fast that they really, really keep Ricky Ray from doing anything. And you know what? And I know what you're saying, and I think we're in for a defensive showdown in that game. It might be the first team to 25 points wins of the game, and I might be too high when I say that. But listen, I want to ask you this, okay, because you just brought it up. I'm with you on the 1-6. Roddy's not. He says it should be East versus West. If it is a traditional East-West Grey Cup, i.e. Toronto versus Edmonton or Calgary, will it stay East-West? Because I think that if Saskatchewan wins this game, and now it's a Saskatchewan against Edmonton or Calgary, all Western Grey Cup, I think there's no choice but to move it to 1-6. So are the Argonauts, in a way, in your mind, playing for the East-West format to continue?
I know what you're saying, Mitchell, but I don't think so at all. I mean, because this is obviously run by a bunch of old-school governors and old-school owners who just want to be staunch in their ways and do things their way. I mean, the first Grey Cup I ever covered was Winnipeg-Calgary back in 2001 in Montreal.
But you know, Winnipeg was in the East then.
Sure, but you have zero interest, you know, zero competing interest east of the province of Manitoba.
Right.
And so, you know, it comes down to this, is what do the owners believe is going to put the most money in their pockets? And so far, it appears that they feel regional rivalries will do that. Here's the issue. Outside of Sask, Winnipeg, and Calgary, Edmonton, name me another rivalry in the CFL. Toronto Hamilton has lost what it had.
Yep.
That doesn't exist anymore. Ottawa has no real natural rival. BC has no rival. So you have two rivalries in a league. Well, if that's the case, then, you know, you got to look at the bigger picture. And so that's something from a competitive balance standpoint that has to get done.
All right. I agree with you on that one. I know where you're coming from. I just think that if the Argos win this game, that we stay East-West. But if the Riders win, it's just the impetus for change. Change that I think should have happened a couple of years ago. But I know where you're coming from, though, because at the end of the day, it's the owners that stir the drink.
Right. Always has been.
Yep. All right,
that's Jeffrey Orridge and Tom Wright and on the commissioners.
We don't want to mention that name Orridge anymore.
There you go.
All right. Arash, always good talking to you. We'll do so Thursday.
Okay, Mitchell. Thanks, Ben.
All right, that is Arash Madani. When we come back, more with the Duke. You're listening to the Sports Cage on 620 CKRM. Time for the afternoon rush, and Montreal Canadiens goalie Carey Price says he's staying off the ice for a little while longer as he deals with a lower body injury. Price met with reporters Tuesday, today, before Montreal's game against the visiting Columbus Blue Jackets to provide an update on his recovery. Price said he suffered the injury in a warm-up before Montreal's November 2nd game at Minnesota, in which he gave up 5 goals on 26 shots in a 6-3 loss. Price insisted the injury is minor and that he'd absolutely be ready to play if the Canadians were in the playoffs. That Habs Blue Jackets game is one of 8 in the NHL tonight. Charlie Lindgren will start in goal for the Habs. No, I don't think Lars is his father, Derek.
Oh, I was thinking Max.
Max Lindgren. Antti Niemi signed by the Habs today. Antti Niemi has been a bust with Dallas and Florida this year.
When he plays in the States, is he Antti Niemi?
I know. Is it Antti Raanta too? I don't know. The newest member of the Regina Pats has joined the club. Cale Fleury arrived just before practice today. One day after being traded by the Kootenay Ice, it's expected Fleury will be in the lineup tomorrow when the Pats are home to the Calgary Hitmen in a 7 o'clock start. John Paddock will join us at the end of Hour 2. And baseball's Managers of the Year are announced today. It's thought the two that will win are the two that oppose one another in the World Series. That would be Dave Roberts of the LA Dodgers and A.J. Hinch of the Houston Astros. The Boston Pizza afternoon rush for Boston Pizza. Every game night at Boston Pizza, enjoy a 575 schooner of Budweiser and enter to win one of 23 incredible NFL trips to Dallas. Let's go to the Wheaton Kia hotline and go to our friend Ian in New Jersey. Hey, Ian, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good.
What's up?
Yeah, the thing I'm looking at is that this idea of the Riders possibly being the beast of the East, I guess. I don't know what you can call them. But if that doesn't motivate a crowd in Toronto, then I think you're absolutely right that they got to do something with the playoff format. But I still think this is going to be a great game.
Oh, I do too. I think the Riders win it, but I think it's going to be a great game. I think both games this weekend are going to be great. I'm just of the opinion, and Derek, I'll bring you in on this, and I think I know where you lie on this. I know Roddy's east-west. As I said to Arash, if the Riders win this game and they become the first team out of the West to qualify for the Grey Cup out of the East, will this end the east-west argument and now we'll get 1-6?
Or maybe you could go to a format, like let's just say if the Riders are a crossover team and they make it to the Grey Cup, maybe the next year you go 1-6.
Well, and that's right. Like I think at some point they have to look at this 1-6 because, yeah. And I forget now because I had it last week.
But I'm saying,
like, it would have been Toronto. Just hold on for 1 second, Ian. It would have been Toronto and Saskatchewan having played at Mosaic Stadium last weekend in the semifinal.
Right, because
Calgary and Winnipeg would have had byes.
Yes,
and you would have had Ottawa at Edmonton, and then the way it would have. Well, I guess we don't know the way it would have turned out. So let's just say the home teams win. So now you would have had the Riders taking on Calgary, and you would have had Edmonton taking on Winnipeg in Winnipeg, which would have been no different from what we saw last weekend.
Yeah, but what I'm thinking is that if you have a crossover team that makes it to the Grey Cup, why don't you do it like the All-Star game in baseball the following year?
Ooh.
You get the 1-6.
I hesitate
then,
to.
And then if you get three, you go east-west.
I'm not with you on that one, Ian. Sorry, I can't buy that one.
Quite honestly, in a 9-team league, not very often is the way it's set up now, team 7 going to be on the outside looking in. I mean, it is. I know what you're saying, and I am kind of torn on whether you keep the divisions or not the divisions. But I mean, the way it's set up now, you know. I still think you get the 6 probably best teams. It just depends on who's seated where and how that shakes down. But I mean, I don't think you're getting any less quality of football because of the divisions.
I guess the only thing, and Ian, I'll let you go, and thanks for the call. I guess where I'm just sort of on, in this day and age where the bottom line means so much, like, we know that the Riders are spending a lot of cabbage going from Ottawa to Toronto.
Sure, yeah. No,
but how much would they have made had they had a home game? And the same for Edmonton.
It's a very, very fair point.
Like, those two teams, to me, got jobbed.
Which are two teams who draw the best in the CFL.
And that has nothing to do with it, but you're right.
They do.
They're with attendance. But would it be any different if it was Calgary or Winnipeg that went in the road when they should have had home games? Like, it's just this year, it's the Riders and Edmonton, sure, being the 3-4 teams who had to go on the road when they should have been playing at home. And that's part of the reason why I think the 1-6 is better than East-West, especially because we've seen that the Riders are what, the 10th team from the West to cross over. We've never had an Eastern team cross over. I don't know why there's such a disparity between East and West every year. That's the million-dollar question. I don't know why that's the case. And yes, there were years when, like, you know, Trestman had his Alouettes, one of the top teams in the league. They were,
but they still would be.
Yes.
You'd still get credit for that in a 1-9 system.
In a 1-9 system, you would still get credit for that. And if it ended up that you had three Eastern teams and three Western teams, great. But at the end of the day, when I look at the schedule, you're playing each team twice.
Which is 16 games. Yeah. You only have two games left over.
Yes.
I would love to disagree with you just for the fact that that would make for good radio, but I can't on this one, Scruffy. I can't because there's only two games. And to even go further, could it not create a little more flexibility when you have to spend those last two games? And right now, you spend those last two games against divisional opponents, right? Well, we've seen a real mucking of the schedule here in this last year when it comes to a team like Ottawa, for instance, who has two byes in the last 3 weeks. Things like, could it not create a little more flexibility if you could just say, okay, let's see how we can work this the best for all nine teams, and it doesn't, they're not incumbent on playing those two games against, and you do it more like an NFL style where if you're the bottom teams, you play those two extra games against the bottom teams from the previous year. You know what I mean? Like you can work.
Yeah,
you can do it.
You
like
can
that.
Do it, but it's different though because like in the NFL, for those
sure,
that don't know,
I get it.
I know, but for the NFL, for those that don't know,
divisions.
The schedule is already set up for next year. Mm-hmm. It's just we slot it in. So if you are the LA Rams, who are first in the NFC West right now,
right,
until Seattle,
you know where 6 year games are.
Yeah, you know that you're going to play your three divisional opponents, once at home, once on the road. But then there's a formula that they have, and I don't have the formula in front of me, but it will say you are playing the top team in the NFC Central, you are playing the second best team in the NFC West, you are playing the AFC East, two games at home, two games on the road. So like when people go, why are the Packers and the Seahawks playing each other every year? Why are the Vikings and Seahawks playing? It's because that's the way the schedule is set up.
But they could.
Because there's a formula there. And it just happens that Green Bay and Seattle, because they've won their divisions, you always have division winner
top
versus
playing,
division
top
winner.
And player. Exactly. Yeah. And so why
because
would that
the
be
NFL
so difficult
is, because the NFL is a 30-team league and the CFL
I know,
is
but you still have good
I know,
versus bad.
I know. Anyhow.
The math shouldn't be that hard.
I know. Let's go to Eldon and Regina. Eldon, bring some stability to this program.
Hello, how are you this evening?
Good, yourself?
Oh, not too horrible.
What's up?
I just like to congratulate CKRM and all the broadcast team there for continued fantastic job on covering the Riders.
Thank you very much.
I don't think there's any team in Canada that gets the kind of coverage and everything we do and does the job CKRM does.
So, well, we aim to please. We might not do it every day, but we aim to please.
I love listening to the program. I love listening to the cage and everything else. So congratulations, everyone at CKRM.
Eldon, I've got no tickets for you if that's what you're looking for.
and then with the team, I'm not... I've never have been a Chris Jones fan, and I'm not at the moment.
Why?
However, I have to tip the hat to Chris Jones and all the coaching staff for bringing this team so far in such a short time.
Eldon, why aren't you a Chris Jones fan?
I just hated some of the decisions he made right in the beginning.
But haven't you realized now that that had to be done?
Well, that's what I'm, I was kind of thinking, sometimes, even for a veteran player, sometimes they get stale, and change is good, right?
Yep.
So, I guess at the end of the day, none of those changes really came back to bite us in the butt.
No, I think, some people, and I'm one of them, I would have liked to have seen Weston Dressler stay here. Because Weston Dressler, John Chick, and I love John Chick, but John Chick's career was stagnating in Hamilton. And he has picked it up now with the Eskimos and changed it him good. But Western Dressler has just been solid ever since he left. And that was maybe the only one where I think that maybe the coaching staff whiffed on. But as people will say, and I don't disagree with them, take a look at our receiving core now. And who would be out if Western Dressler was in?
Yeah, like that's Jones. They've done a fantastic job at creating depth. That it's unbelievable. You know, Daron Carter is probably one of the best receivers in the league, and that guy can make acrobatic catches that make some of the best in the NFL look silly.
I don't disagree with you.
So we've got a fantastic team. I am excited for them this weekend. I think we've got what it takes to repeat 1989 in the Grey Cup on that year, a similar scenario. You know, they went from worst to first, basically speaking. And I think we do have the juice to do that. And congratulations to the team so far. And I'm definitely going to be watching on Sunday. And
well, don't watch. Listen, Eldon. Listen.
The idea of going to Ottawa for in the Grey Cup.
All right. Eldon, I don't disagree with a lot of what you say, but I think you should change your attitude on Chris Jones, though, because the plan that he set up, it's working.
I might become a believer.
All right. Thanks a lot for the call, Eldon. Appreciate it.
Yep.
Didn't the Riders host a playoff game in 88? Yeah.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah, they didn't go from worst to the Grey Cup. Yeah,
they played BC. And I will remember that game because I sat on the east side, and it was a cold afternoon.
Yeah.
And
sounds like
the Riders stayed in the game, even though Tony Cherry kept continuing to run the sweep around the right side and get yards. And I think it was about midway through the third quarter. And I don't know who it was for the Riders, but Nick Hebler forced a fumble, and Rick Goltz picked it up. And it got really damn cold after that, if you know what I mean.
Isn't that the truth?
Yes. Yeah. That was...
funny how that can affect...
funny how that can happen. We're going to take a break. John Paddock coming up in just a few minutes.
Good stuff.
But we will take a break and come back with more. An hour or two of The Sports Cage on 620 CKRM. Buster Riles punching all the buttons, playing a little Lita Ford. Like it a lot.
How can't you like Lita Ford?
Exactly.
Come on, did you grow up in the 80s or what?
Exactly. If you've missed any of the show, you can listen to the podcast later on for the Canadian Brew House. Join us for brunch and Caesar specials every weekend. If you want to get a hold of me on Twitter, you can do so at Scruffy Regina. You can get a hold of Derek at D Myers YQR.
On my new phone!
On his new phone!
I'm so pumped.
The Twitter feed for Molson Canadian. Specially marked cases of 24 cans. Take home a free limited edition NHL original 6-pint beer glass. John Paddock coming up in about 10 minutes' time. Pat's made a big trade yesterday.
Yeah.
Getting Cale Fleury from the Kootenay Ice. A lot of people are going, did they give up too much in that trade? I say no, because they had some additional picks that they had garnered. The conditional pick.
I mean, it's now or never.
Which, well, exactly. It is now, and that's where I was going to. It's now or never. Cale Fleury gives this team, and...
I mean, John's going to...
Like, let's look at last year, okay? They had Hobbs, Zabrowski, Harrison.
Well, you could just even end it after those first two. I mean,
Smart, Davidson, who filled the role nicely for them.
Sure.
But now you've got those three guys that were gone. You needed a couple of stud defensemen back there. You've got Mahura... But he's not Hobbs-like, okay?
Not yet.
Cale Fleury is going to stabilize a defense core that has had its ups and downs this year.
Yep.
And you had to give away something to get Fleury, so they had to give up Jonathan Smart. Cole Muir is a prospect that it's a tough one to give up, but I like the deal for the Pats.
Well, let's do it this way. Now, I've said this since forever. It is such a massive thing, a massive to have a guy that can move the puck. And I had a real long talk with Phil Andrews the other day. We were discussing Hobbs and Zabrowski and their ability to that first pass or to skate the puck up the ice a little bit. And especially in junior hockey, and even more so when you've got Sam Steele You Nick know, guys
Henry,
like that.
Jake Lissichon.
Emil.
Oxenden, yeah.
Oxenden. They've got guys that can score. You want to spend as little time in your own end as possible. And I know sometimes you could say, well, they're not heavy enough defensively, or they don't, you know, puck moving is so key. And that's something that they're, you know, looking to Fleury to provide. The other guys, they're going to come along. But yeah, I mean, Hobbs and Zabrowski are two really good defense, and it's hard to replace.
By the way, Connor Hobbs, last week, and I just found this out, was it yesterday when I was down at the rink? Or was it last week before the Moose Jaw series? Connor Hobbs broke his wrist in an American Hockey League game.
Oh, that stinks.
So he's out for a while. He went to hit a guy at the boards, and just he went into the boards the wrong way and ended up breaking his wrist. So Connor Hobbs is out for 4 to 6 weeks, and he was having a nice start there. As for Adam Brooks, he had a couple of assists to start off with.
Yeah, yeah.
But now he's sort of on the third, fourth line, yeah, not getting a lot of ice time. But I know the Leafs really like what they've got there.
He's 20, 21.
They really like what they've got there. Let's go to Byron and Shaunavon. Hey, Byron, how are you?
Hey, hi. I missed about an hour of your show, so I hope nobody else brought it up. But you were talking about that East-West thing.
Yep.
What would happen if they, just like the Riders, they have a better team than either Toronto or Hamilton or Ottawa? Why couldn't they get the home playoff game?
Hey, well, because, you know, they want to give that carrot, obviously, when they had the crossover. You've got to give that carrot to the second-place team to have the home game. And it wouldn't be the first time that the team from the West has had a better record than the team in the East. I think Edmonton had a better record than who did they beat out in the Eastern semi last year? Was it Toronto?
Right. Hamilton.
Hamilton, wasn't it?
Yeah, they had a better record than Hamilton. They had a better record than Ottawa, but they, you know, you've got to give the East some caveat there. But as I said, if you just scrapped East-West and made it 1-9, 1-2 with a first-round bye, 3-6, 4-5, and then the winners play off, as I said, this weekend you would have had Calgary and Winnipeg having a bye. You would have had the Riders home to Toronto. You would have had Edmonton or Toronto in Edmonton. So, you know,
Ottawa and Edmonton.
Or Ottawa and Edmonton, I'm sorry.
Toronto here.
But yeah, I just think that when you've got teams like the Eskimos and the Riders that had better records, I think that they should have gotten the home game in the 1-9 format, because a home gate means so much to teams' bottom lines.
Yeah,
and the Riders, who are spending a boatload of money by staying out East, and obviously they've had the green light to do that, otherwise they'd have been back here. But just imagine what a home gate would have provided for them, and then going to Calgary, which is what they would have done if 1-4, if the home teams win those games, it would have been a lot cheaper than staying out East. So I think the CFL really has to look at this East-West against the 1-9 format, because the East just traditionally can't stack up to the West, and I just don't see that changing for a while.
Yeah. Hey, can I just ask you one more question, then I'll hang up and I'll listen to you if you want to. If you were commissioner and you had free reign...
If I was commissioner, we'd have a big problem, but go ahead.
What would you do? What would you do to get more interest? So not only in the West, but in the East especially.
Oh.
What do you think you could do?
Byron, I think that the CFL, I'll let you go. I just think that the CFL and its teams do a very poor job of marketing the product. The networks do what they can, and yes, I think sometimes TSN could be a little bit better, but at the end of the day, I think TSN does a pretty good job with what they do.
Oh, yeah.
They could be better, but you could say that with anybody, though. But I just think that from the top on down, there needs to be a better job of marketing the product.
Well, and I mean, that's everywhere. You know, one thought I had there while we were chatting, you know, if it is a problem when it comes down to the schedule, why not go to 2 games against everybody, reduce the schedule to 16 games? That bumps up Grey Cup 2 weeks. We've solved the problem that people have when it's too cold out, because obviously something was up in Winnipeg last weekend. Why was there 6,000 empty seats? you have parity when it comes to the amount of games played, because you play everybody twice. You don't have to worry about the scheduling. And you run it 1 through 9, and top 2 get a bye. And like you said, 3 plays 6, 4 plays 5.
Seems easy to me.
I don't know.
There's others over
I mean, you go, well, you have a tough time convincing each team to give up one home gate, too. I do understand that, but I mean, I don't know.
But it would appease those, because...
That's pretty easy in the old ledger for me.
And I know that people want the schedule to move up, and I understand that. But I just don't think the CFL, remember, we've got nothing here to go up against. Nothing. Edmonton has the Oilers. Winnipeg has the Jets. Calgary has the Flames. Every other team, except for Hamilton, has an NHL team.
Okay.
And when the Stanley Cup playoffs are on, you don't want to take that chance of going, especially the broadcaster who knows they are going to get stuffed with all the games on Sportsnet. There's no way. You're not going to tell me that with the Oilers' run last year that people would have been interested in the Eskimos?
They were done. They're done by the time that you would have started the season if you started June 15th. You know, Oilers were done by then. They were done in the second round. You're only running the chance. How many times does a Canadian team...
You don't want to go up against the Stanley Cup playoffs.
How many times does a Canadian team...
The network doesn't want to go up against the Stanley Cup
playoffs. This isn't a network league. Only 10% of your revenue.
But it is, because who's giving the money?
But that's only 10% of your revenue. 35% of your revenue comes from the gate.
All right, we will argue that later, because coming up next, John Paddock. We will take a break and then get to John Paddock. You're listening to the Sports Cage for Sask Lotteries on 620. Time for the RMP Sports Cage Sports Ticker, and the Montreal Canadiens have added some depth to the goaltender position. The NHL team is picking up Antti Niemi off waivers. Regular starter Carey Price is nursing a lower body injury. The Habs entertain Columbus tonight. Winnipeg's home to Arizona. Edmonton welcomes Vegas, and Vancouver's at LA. And Torrey Lovullo of the Arizona Diamondbacks has been named the National League Manager of the Year. A lot of people thought that the Dodgers' Dave Roberts would get that, but the National League honor goes to Torrey Lovullo, and the American League winner has not been announced yet. A.J. Hinch, the favorite. Terry Francona of Cleveland, also in the running. The RMP Sports Cage Sports Ticker for Regina Motor Products, home of the no car crap BS. Mitchell Blair, Derek Myers with you, and Buster Riles. I believe we have the head coach of the Regina Pats with us, John Paddock. How are you, John?
I'm good. Thanks, guys.
I guess, you know, we talked a lot about Cale Fleury yesterday. And, you know, we heard your comments on that yesterday. But the one thing that I did that I was interested in was the fact that you had been, you know, zeroed in on this guy since last year. And for those that didn't hear that comment yesterday, you really wanted this guy basically from the time the playoffs started last year.
Well, before that, I mean, I inquired about him, you know, not quite this early in last year's run up to the trade deadline, but at some point, because he was a player that obviously could have helped us last year. Probably when I first asked about him, we probably didn't have Josh at that time, so we were looking to add to our defense. And, you know, with that point of thinking, we had to do deals, or we did deals last year with always with the possibility of winning the Memorial Cup bid in sight. So that would be another part of it for sure.
He's going to get acclimatized to his teammates right away here as you guys are hitting the bus next week or very soon here for your annual West Coast trip. How do you see that shaping up?
Well, I think it's going to be tough and interesting. A couple of teams there, Portland and Tri-Cities, have been noted since summertime as being contenders to come out of the West this year. One plays a very fast game. The other plays a very heavy game. We got Everett in a little bit of probably transition year, new coach and so forth. And then Seattle defending champions. That's going to bring a lot of juice into us, I think. And Spokane team that, you know, probably have made the two best additions this season. They acquired Fisher from the Hat in a big trade, and they got their best forward back from last year. So all of a sudden, like, Spokane is a bona fide contender to represent the West in the league final for sure.
That West Coast trip isn't going to be easy, John. And, you know, the teams go into that setting a goal as to what they want to do as far as how many points do they want to get out of there? Or can you even afford to do that?
Well, I think that varies. I've thought about that a little bit. It varies from your team or how you think they can handle things like that to just overall conditions. I don't think it's a bad idea. I mean, just off the cuff of my head, I think your goal is to win every game, but I think also that anytime you go on the road and you're a 500 team, but that's what everybody would like to be at the end of the year. So we need to go there and win games. Moose Jaw went out and did that. They're an elite team. We have to go out there and get some points, absolutely.
I know talking to some guys today, and I don't know how you feel about this, but they're really looking forward to the game against Seattle. Obviously, the reason for that, I think everyone knows because of last year's final. But, there, as you said, there are so many good teams out there. You can't just focus on one game, can you?
No, for sure. I mean, I knew the Seattle game will help the guys juice up that are returning and all of it. But, that's like a lot of things in sports. It's like when somebody hasn't won in somebody else's building for 22 years or something stupid like that in pro sports. Whoever was on that team 22 years ago on both teams has nothing to do with it. And, realistically in this game, some key players for us aren't here and some key players for them aren't there and that were involved last year. So, it's another game, really. It's really, that's what it is, another game.
When you take a gauge of your team now, you're getting towards the third mark of the season. What do you see?
Well, we're a work in process. There's no question. I'm probably, just probably right where you thought we would be. Okay. I would say more or less. I knew that, as I knew last year, we were going to be like. I knew Moose Jaw was going to be quite possibly the top team. And Swift Current certainly picked it up from where they were last year, how tough they were in the playoffs, an out-winning series, and us going to seven games. So, and they clearly have the best line in junior hockey. It's really amazing what they're doing, those three guys, because as it is with any great players over the history of the thing, people don't necessarily think, or it's the same today, Wayne Gretzky had to face the other team's best checker, best defenseman all the time, and a plan by the coaches to stop him, and nobody could do it. So for sure, we played them very early, and we don't play them until January 6th, but for sure, every time a team plays with Current, they are saying that we want these guys on the ice against them, and they're saying, here's some of the things they do, or these are some things we got to counteract it, and it's not working. Yeah. Kapanemi scored 12 seconds in the game the other night. They had 4 of the 6 goals. So they're clearly unbelievable.
John, before you head off on the West Coast trip, you've got one more game at home. It is against the Calgary Hitmen. They are struggling this year. They're 6-11-2 going in, but we know that on any night, any team can win a hockey game. So you guys have to be focused for that game before you head on the bus.
Well, it's a big game, clearly. Head out on a winning note, and I'm not sure. I know what the Calgary's record is, but I'm not sure what it's been in the last little bit. I know they swept Lethbridge last weekend. I think they're probably, I'm guessing there might have been something like 0-5 or 6, and now they are 500 in the last 10 and 12 games. That's what I would think. So that's a very competitive team.
Is there a worry about, looking ahead to getting on the bus? Because obviously some of the guys, here we go, 2 weeks on the bus, 8 games on the road. Is there a danger of guys looking past this game to the West Coast trip?
I don't think so. I don't think we looked past a lot of games last year, and we won them based on skill, and we could do that. You can not win the hockey game tomorrow. I'd like to think that you're pretty dominant if you didn't win it, but I think that where we're at in the standings, having just lost a couple of games and knowing that we have to pay attention to all the details to come out in the positive side most nights, I would think that we'll be playing our top level.
One last question from me. I'm a huge Jake Lecicin fan. I have been from the time you got him. He looks as if he is back to being the Jake Lecicin that we knew he would be before the injury. What have you seen from Jake? Because it looks to me as if he is the same guy that you had before he got hurt.
Yeah, I think that he's you know, his game has got steadily better, which is, you know, what you would expect and think, and no surprise. And I thought especially last couple of games we were in Alberta and leading into the next two or three games that he was, you know, he was real good. So I agree that he's on the upper side, closer to or playing like he did last year.
John, that's all I've got. Thanks for the time, and best of luck tomorrow. And if I don't see you tomorrow, best of luck on the West Coast trip.
All right. Thank you very much, guys.
All right. John Paddock, head coach, general manager of your Regina Pats. And tomorrow night, they'll take on the Calgary Hitmen, 7 o'clock at the Brandt Center. We will have the game for you right here on 620 CKRM with Phil Andrews, who's probably going to make sure he's packing up the blankie and the teddy bear tomorrow because he's going to need it for 2 weeks.
He's getting away, too. You know, is this a vacation for Phil? Because, I mean, he's got three little ones at home. Is this a vacation or is this work?
I don't know if it's a vacation or not, but I did tell him this. Phil and some other members of the Pats hierarchy that are going on the trip, they're going to be at CenturyLink Field next Monday night when the Atlanta Falcons take on the Seattle Seahawks. I just told Phil, you better be bringing me something back from CenturyLink. And then Phil, just for whatever reason, he walked away.
Is it nothing?
Yeah.
Nada?
So I don't know. Phil?
Is he in the Hawks' nest? Are they in the nest?
I don't know where they are.
But, does it matter, does it?
It doesn't really matter. The Regina Pats item of the week, by the way, is jerseys. Blue, white, and those fantastic 100th anniversary jerseys are available at the Neutral Zone store at the Brandt Center, open Tuesday to Saturday, 10 till 4. I like those 100th anniversary
jerseys. I stopped by the business office the other day where they got some stuff set up as well. Man, is it nice in there.
What, in the business office? Yeah, oh, yeah. It's great in there.
Yeah, what a great job they've done in there and getting set for this Memorial Cup and the 100th anniversary season, all this coinciding, the outdoor game coming up. And I really, and I know this is kind of unfair to say, but the Pats season always really, really starts for me when they return from that West Coast trip.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that think that.
Because of the CFL season, yep. Kind of cuts it off a little bit. And you know, you can set your watch to it because Agribition's in town next week. Shout out to the Pro Rodeo coming up for that next week.
Is this the last time it's in there? This is the last year?
This is the Pro Rodeo now. It used to be the CCA.
Right.
So the CCA still happens in Swift Current. These guys are coming from Edmonton, which is the last show of the Pro Rodeo.
Right, because they were just at Rogers Place. So, that's where the Oilers were on the road. Right.
This will be the first for the next season. Anyways, it's always kind of the indication when they get back, it's like, all right, now it's time. We know what the Pats are. They've gone through this, you know, hellish road trip that they have to go through every year, and now we're ready, and now we're rolling. Mm-hmm.
No, I agree with you. And I think there's a lot of people around here, and this is no disrespect to the Pats, but until the Rider season is over and the CFL season is over, they don't pay attention to junior hockey.
Is that right?
Well,
I don't pay attention to my kids' school until after the Rider season.
I hear you.
I mean, let's get real.
From Ian and Moose Jaw, finally, some dub talk. As psyched as I am to watch the Riders in the... Jeez, now I lost it. Hold on. Now as I am to watch... As psyched as I am to watch the Riders in the final, the East Division needs to be talked about as interesting as it will be this year. The Pats paid enough, but I don't mind the trade. Carter Hart's going to wind up in the East Division. The question is where. Can't wait for the outdoor game. That's from Ian in Moose Jaw. Wow.
And you heard it. You heard John Paddock, general manager, coach of the Pats, saying he basically said he thought Moose Jaw was going to be the best team in the East. And what Swift Current is doing, especially with that Steinberg line, is ridiculous. Hey, basically, people are game planning for them, and they cannot shut these guys down.
I knew that Swift Current was going to be good.
Yeah,
and I said last year, not this good. In that 7-game series,
sure,
that's a good hockey team. And
but they'd be rolling.
I didn't think though that they'd be doing what they've been doing this year.
It's great.
Steinbergen, Heppanimi, Godden, 1, 2, 3 in league scoring.
Oh yeah.
Those guys, and you know what?
I
know they like what they've got in Moose Jaw, and they should.
But Manny is.
But what Swift Current's and what the Pats are going to do leading up to the Memorial Cup,
February, March.
I'll tell you what. Exactly. You just beat me to it. February, March, Highway 1.
The barns are going to be packed. It's going to be good.
Outstanding.
It's going to be real good.
Riley, I thought you'd have a Lynchism for me there, and you didn't. Oh. All right.
He's down.
Very quickly, Riders win Sunday or not?
I'm back Thursday, I'll tell you then.
Oh, yeah, you are.
right.
See, I wait in suspense.
Scruffy, you're all off in the shop today.
I am. I'm all
off. You read one text that throws you off, and then you're
gone.
There
you go. All right. We'll
see you
Thursday,
buddy.
All right. All right. He's got a couple days now to think about it. All right. We'll take a break. When we come back, we're going to Edmonton to talk a little Eskimos with Dave James. Dave Campbell from 630.
Come on,
Scruffy. Oh, I got to get out of here. You're listening to The Sports Cage on 620 CKR. Good evening, Saskatchewan. Welcome to Hour 3 of The Sports Cage. It's been a busy 2 hours, and Hour 3 is going to be just as busy. We've been talking ad nauseum about the Saskatchewan Roughriders, and why wouldn't we? Of course, they'll be in Toronto Sunday afternoon, East Final, game time here at noon on 620 CKRM, pregame show at 9. But there's a couple of other teams that we sort of haven't talked about this week, and that would be the Edmonton Eskimos and the Calgary Stampeders. And we go out on the Wheaton Kia hotline to our good friend Dave Campbell, 630 CHED in Edmonton, does the color work beside Morley Scott. Dave, thanks for joining me. Greatly appreciate it. What's new?
Well, we're just getting excited for another Battle of Alberta Western Final. It's the third in the last 4 years between these two teams. And, you know, there was a time during the season where it just felt like this wasn't going to happen from an Eskimos perspective with that six-game losing streak. But now it's a six-game win streak if you include the playoff win in Winnipeg on Sunday. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of hype surrounding this game on Sunday.
Dave, it's been a weird year in Edmonton, hasn't it?
Oh, it has. I mean, you know, they started out so hot, 7-0, and you thought they couldn't possibly miss the playoffs. Then they go through that six-game losing streak, and you're wondering, well, how can they make the playoffs now? And then they roll off 5 wins in a row to end the season, and of course beat the Winnipeg Blue Bombers in the West Semi on Sunday. So it's just been strange, you know, and the injury situation has been, you know, as bad and as I've ever seen. It's the worst I've ever seen it anyway, as far as man games lost. And, you know, even look now, and the roster looks much better than it did during that six-game streak. But even look at that roster that's on the six-game injured list. I mean, there's a lot of stars that are on the injured list still. So, but, you know, this team found a way to rally, and they're playing, you know, the best football, I think, of anybody in the Canadian Football League right now, and they're definitely in that conversation. I mean, you got four teams that could legitimately win the Grey Cup, and I think that's what makes it really exciting.
Yeah, I agree with you when you say that you're the hottest team going into this weekend. And I just want to dial back to Sunday for a second. And, you know, I think a lot of us going into the game didn't know if Matt Nichols was going to play the whole game. And a lot of us thought that Edmonton would win the game because Nichols probably wouldn't be 100%. Nichols did play the whole game, and the Eskimos still delivered a beating on the Bombers, which tells you how good they are. But in my mind, Dave, that game changed on the fake punt that didn't work. Is that the way you guys are seeing it there too? Or were you guys of the mentality that, you know what, we were just better than Edmonton and eventually we were going to outlast them?
Yeah, you know, I'm with you. I'm with you, Mitch. You know, I think when I look back at that game, this is what I think about. 10-10 score at the first half. In the first half, going into the second half. And I thought it was a game where the Bombers were carrying the play to that point, even though it was a 10-10 game. And then Hugh O'Neill kicks a punt single. And then right after that, the Bombers, they have a fake punt call, which, you know, it's questionable, I would say, at that part of the field at that time in the game. But we know the MO of one Mike O'Shea. He's a very aggressive coach when it comes to special teams. The Eskimos get the big stop, and C.J. Gable punches the ball in into the end zone for a touchdown. Now, the Bombers did come back after that drive and then kick a field goal. And so it was an 18-13 game at that point. But I think the fact that the Eskimos turned the ball over at a key moment in the game in the third quarter when things were not going their way completely. And I think, you know, again, Winnipeg was carrying the play at that point. But I think that momentum change really sparked the Eskimos. They, you know, they were able to force a Justin Medlock field goal. Then they come out, and then there's two touchdowns from Mike Riley, one to Zylstra, one to Darius Bowman, where, you know, the bus in the coverage in the Bomber secondary was just staggering. just how they left Zylstra and Bowman wide open, then Gable scores again. But yeah, I do think that that punt fake, even though the Bombers went, you know, came back and scored on their drive, I still think it gave the Eskimos some extra life, and I do believe that was the turning point in the game.
How much has C.J. Gable meant to the Eskimos?
Oh, my word, Mitch. Oh, my word. It's been incredible, you know. And we got to go all the way back to week two when John White hurt his knee in the first quarter against the Montreal Alouettes here in Edmonton. And then after that, they had Trayvon Vann, who played for a bit and was all right. Then they had some decent play out of Ladarius Perkins, but not what we're seeing, not even close to what we're seeing out of C.J. Gable, who first blocks extremely well. Secondly, he runs very well. Thirdly, he's showing a little bit of a penchant to catch the ball and be reliable, even though that's probably his weakest skill, is being a receiver out of the backfield. But his blocking and his running has just been incredible. And, you know, this is a tall, thick body. And he is very hard to bring down. And you can tell his O-line just loves blocking for him, you know. And that touchdown off of that turnover, I mean, he first finds a hole, breaks about 3 or 4 tackles, and then men at the 5-yard line, and then keeps driving for 2-3 yards until his offensive line came and pushed him over the goal line. But, you know, he's just been tremendous, and it allows the Eskimos to be balanced in their run-pass ratio, and it opens their playbook so much more than you know we saw earlier in the season, even at 7-0, that 7-0 start, and especially during that 6-game losing streak. But during this 6-game win streak, he's played 5 of those games, and this Eskimos offense has become a better offense because of him.
Dave Campbell from 630 CHED joining me on the Wheat and Kia hotline. Mike Riley, the MOP out of the West, I would think he would probably win the award. Have you seen him play better than what he has in this latest win streak for the Eskimos? Because really, I think he's been at the top of his game right from the start of the season and everything, but yeah. I think he's really picked it up in this 6-game win streak that you guys have had.
Yeah, completely. And, you know, I saw him in the run to the Grey Cup in 2015. Last year, I thought was a tremendous season for him. But, you know, we're just seeing, you know, more layers of this guy. And, you know, he's going to be 33 years old in January. And it looks like he can play for another few years, right? And I think it's really quieting the Riley versus Franklin debate about who stays and who goes. There's no question Mike Riley has to stay, in my opinion. Even though there's upside with James Franklin, but you don't get rid of known commodities and MOP guys like Mike Riley. But yeah, I think he's just added another layer just to his quality of a player. And you know, during that 6-game win streak or losing streak, excuse me, he didn't play very well at times, Mitch. I mean, he gave up too many pick sixes. He was just, you know, turning the ball over way too much. But then, you know, probably around the back half of that streak, he started to round into form. And he's just been incredible, and not just as a guy that, you know, can get yards. And I mean, he's the best big play quarterback in the league right now. You know, with passes over 20 yards and passes over 30 yards, or completions, I should say. But you know, his running of a threat has come back, and he doesn't run like he used to. I mean, people forget he led the Eskimos in rushing in 2013. I mean, it's crazy. But now he's starting to run a little bit more and being more choosy when he runs. But he had 12 rushing touchdowns in the regular season, which is second most by a quarterback in CFL history. He had 42 of the or he counted for 42 of the 52 offensive touchdowns by the Eskimos. And I think during the injured, they've been injured all year, but you know, we saw him playing with different running backs, different receivers, different offensive linemen. He has the ability to make everyone around him better. I've not seen Mike Riley at this level at all, just compared to what we're seeing right now in this 6-game winning streak. And really, I think for the balance of the year, he has played extremely well.
It's because of his hat collection, right?
Oh, of course. He's got an excellent hat game. I mean, whether he's wearing a toque or a top hat, the guy's got hat game.
He's got hat game, that's for sure. Hey, you mentioned it. The Eskimos and the Stampeders have played in the Western Final the last couple of years, and Calgary's always seemed to have that edge. And obviously, they're going to be favored again with the game at McMahon, but there's got to be a feeling around Edmonton, though, that if this is the year that the Eskimos are going to knock off Calgary in the Western Final, this is going to be the year, considering the way you're playing and the way Calgary finished the regular season.
Yeah, you know, I'm thinking back to, you know, when this first this little streak of, you know, three or four started and the, you know, these two teams meeting in the West Final. I go back to 2014 under Chris Jones, and, you know, that was a team that was, I think, still maturing at that time. I don't think they were ready for the spotlight of a Grey Cup appearance at that point, and then show it because they got blown out in that game. And they, you know, didn't play very well against Calgary for, you know, they get Calgary fits, but they didn't play very well against them in the regular season. Then you go back to 2015, 2 years ago, and, you know, they gained confidence throughout that year, and they went on a 10-game run, 10-game winning streak, which includes a couple of wins against Calgary, one in Calgary in October, and then the West Final in Edmonton, where it just didn't seem like, you know, there was any doubt that the Eskimos were going to beat Calgary, you know, that they had their number. This year, it's going to be interesting because I know Calgary has lost three in a row. I still think they're going to be favored. I'm not totally convinced that, you know, they're through their issues and they're through, you know, I'm not sure what's seeping through that team, but all I know is that a team in a West Final situation, you know, they can manufacture enough momentum and emotion to you know, really play well and win that football game. But for the Eskimos, you know, it's hard to generate momentum game to game to game. I don't know if it carries over, but their confidence is sky high, and I do believe that they feel that they can beat Calgary and go to the Grey Cup. So it's going to be, you know, honestly, I just feel like it's going to be one of those barn burner classic West Finals that is going to be a pick 'em. But I do think the Eskimos, they do stand a good chance of winning that football game and heading to Ottawa for the Grey Cup.
Eskimos were in the position that the Riders were in last year, different teams obviously, but getting to the East Final, then Keenan LaFrance and the Red Blacks tripped that up for Edmonton. Do you see something on this year's Riders that they could get there that maybe Edmonton didn't do last year, or is it still a case of, you know what, if we were playing on a dry track last year, the Eskimos would have been there? I guess what I'm trying to say, Dave, is do the Riders do what the Eskimos couldn't do last year?
That's going to be a tough one, you know, and I'm really debating in my head because I see a lot of, you know, a lot of debate or a lot of, you know, what am I trying to say here? I see a lot of arguments for the Riders, you know, and I love the way they played against the Ottawa Red Blacks. Now, you are a little bit concerned that they gave up that many yards against Trevor Harris, and now here comes Ricky Ray, who is, in my opinion, a much better quarterback than Trevor Harris, and I think Trevor Harris is a good quarterback. You got the James Wilder Jr. factor, but you know, the Riders are playing with, you know, when I look at them, that's, they got the Chris Jones swag, right? And I think that's a dangerous element. The quarterback play, if Kevin Glenn plays like he did against the Red Blacks, you don't have to worry about Brandon Bridge, and plus, you know, you're probably going to go to the Grey Cup. And I'll take the Riders defense over the Argos defense, although I do think the Argos defense is much better than the Red Blacks defense. So, I think it's another pick 'em game, you know, and I would probably slightly favor the Argos, but I think there's lots of arguments in favor of the Riders. And the fact as well, and that they made the decision to stay out east, you know, which is not an easy thing to do. I mean, that's going to be an expensive bill at the end of the trip. But, you know, there's some merits for it. There's some merits against it. But I think the fact that they are out east, I think that definitely evens the playing field for sure.
One last question for you. If the Eskimos play the Riders at the Grey Cup in Ottawa, what's the bigger story? The fact it's two Western teams in the Grey Cup for the first time, or the fact that Chris Jones is going up against the team that he took to the Grey Cup 2 years ago?
Wow. That's amazing. I'm going to say it's going to be a slight edge to the fact that it's two Western teams in the Grey Cup for the first time. But that second storyline you're talking about will be a big one during the week if that's what we see next week in Ottawa.
Well, Dave, I think that's what I'm picking for next week. I know a lot of people believe that Calgary are going to win. I know a lot of people that are Rider fans that wonder if Toronto has what Ottawa couldn't do and beat the Riders. But what I do know is it's going to be a fantastic weekend of football. So enjoy Calgary, and we'll catch up with you soon.
Thanks, Mitch. Appreciate it.
Mitchell Blair back with you. Bottom of the ninth. Time to come in for the save. Buster Riles, you've been summoned from the bullpen. The Edmonton Eskimos and the Saskatchewan Roughriders in the Grey Cup. You heard me talking with Dave Campbell about that. And I asked him the question, If those two teams make it, what's the bigger storyline? Is it the fact that you would have two Western teams for the first time playing in the Grey Cup? And yes, I know that you had a Calgary-Winnipeg Grey Cup and a Winnipeg-Saskatchewan Grey Cup, but at that time, Winnipeg was technically in the East. Or with the Edmonton media there and the national media there, would the whole Chris Jones to Regina after the Grey Cup, after he took the Eskimos to the Grey Cup, would it take center stage? And I've been thinking about this. I think at the commissioner's news conference, when Randy Ambrosi stands up in what I think will be the event of Grey Cup week, I think that the Edmonton-Saskatchewan Grey Cup would take center stage. But when you have the coaches' media conference with Chris Jones and Jason Moss, I get the feeling that the Edmonton media would be all over Chris Jones about the defection.
Yeah, I think that that could play a major role in what the media would be talking about during Grey Cup weekend. I mean, you win a Grey Cup and then you leave, what, 2 weeks after?
Two weeks? What a week, wasn't it? Like, it was like, yay, we've won! Yay, we got back to Edmonton! And then the next day it was like, hey, I'm here.
Yeah, it was quick, for sure. And so I'm sure that there's still a little bit of sourness over there in Edmonton about it, and why not play up a story like that for Grey Cup weekend?
Say what you will about Jason Moss, but I think the Eskimos have rebounded from Chris Jones leaving rather nicely.
Yeah, for sure they have. And Jason Moss is a good football coach, in my opinion. I just think he needs maybe a little bit of anger management treatment or something.
I agree with you. I agree with you on that. This game just fascinates me on Sunday because everything just yells at me that the Riders are going to win this game. And I don't know if it's just the fact because they played so well against Ottawa. They played so well down the stretch. And yeah, I realize that Mark Trestman, going up against him when he's got a week to prepare. I don't know. Everybody assumed that when Kent Austin came back into the CFL that the Tiger Cats were going to win Grey Cup after Grey Cup after Grey Cup because of what he did here in 07. That never materialized. I just think that, take nothing away from Mark Trestman because he is a great head coach. But I think he's gotten into the Rider heads because of 09 and 10. Like, I don't think at the end of the day he's the guy. And if the Riders had won one of those games, I think that people would be going, yeah, it'll be a pretty good coaching matchup. But I just think that what he did in 09 and 10 has got Rider Nation wigged out a little bit.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. It's got me wigged out a little bit. I took Toronto in this game in my predictions before the playoffs started because of the kind of coach that Mark Trestman is and the success he's had against the Riders. But I kind of, ever since the Riders beat Ottawa and how well they played, I've kind of had this 2013 gut feeling that the Riders, I don't see them losing anymore on Sunday.
Yeah, when I take a look at where they're going, I think they beat Toronto. And I still believe, and I know that a lot of people have texted in and they said to me, do you really think that Ottawa is better than Toronto? Yeah, I do. Part of me just says I do. And the way the Red Blacks played the other day doesn't really reinforce my argument, and it won't if Toronto wins. But if the Riders get to the Grey Cup and they play Edmonton or Calgary, it's going to be a hell of a football game. We talked about what the storyline will be. How long do you think it would be before somebody asked Rod about the Bo Levi shut your mouth comment?
Seconds.
Oh, without a doubt. And yeah. I can't wait to see that. That's got to be a picture op. That's got to be a photo op. Rod and Bo Levi on the field that TD plays shaking hands.
Yeah.
Bo Levi would do it. And Roddy would too.
Absolutely.
Who's kidding who? If there's two bigger, if the CFL was wrestling, the two biggest heels would be Bo Levi and Roddy. Agreed?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Absolutely, they would be, because we know how much Roddy's loved in Saskatchewan. We also know how much Roddy's loved in Calgary, Edmonton, Winnipeg. Oh, it'd be fun.
Yeah.
It'd be fun. Before we leave, Breaking news out of Edmonton. The Oilers have made a trade. UC Jokinen. Oh, the UC Jokinen era in Edmonton. It was all of what? 18 games? He gone. The newest member of the Edmonton Oilers is Mike Camilleri.
Wow.
UC Jokinen for Mike Camilleri.
I got the pleasure of watching Mike Camilleri play with the Habs for a few seasons, and he's always good for, you know, nice 20-ish goals, and he puts the puck in the net.
Oh, so in other words, the guy like they had in Jordan Eberle?
Yeah. Just older and slower.
Thanks. Oh, boy. If you're in Swift Current tonight and you're not going to the Credit Union iPlex, you should be. Warriors and Broncos, top two teams in the Western Hockey League going at it. That'll be a dandy. If I was in Swift Current tonight, that's where I would be headed after this. Instead, I've got to go do locker talk. They're already waiting for me because the show started at 6, and obviously it's way past that, so I got to head over to Access. And then I'm going to go home to watch Mike Camilleri and the Edmonton Oilers against the Vegas Golden Knights.
Will Mike Camilleri already be there?
I don't know. Probably not. I know Jordan Eberle would be there if they wouldn't have. I've beat that horse long enough. Buster Riles, good show tonight. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Have a good one.